welcome to Harmontown and Nerd Melt, Meltdown Comics. Harmontown is now in session once again. Let's welcome to the stage the mayor of Harmontown, Dan Harmon.
Ridiculous, that song.
It's called Little Willie. No offense.
I don't know if you had anything you wanted to talk about tonight, but we got a mysterious package delivered to us in the green room.
Really?
It appears to be a self-published book by a man named Daniel Quinn called Beyond Civilization, Humanity's Next Great Adventure. And you're all wondering, do I simply have to wrap something in brown paper and send it to the green room in order to have you focus your episode on it? But
read the first like couple sentences.
I actually want to read what caught my eye on the back. It says, in Beyond Civilization, Daniel Quinn thinks the unthinkable. Now. We have to assume Daniel Quinn wrote this, but that doesn't matter. Everyone comes to a point in their life when
is it possible to think the unthinkable?
Thinks the unthinkable. We all know there's no one right way to build a bicycle. No. You're laughing at that because it's specific, but it's true. That's what hooks me in. We all know there's no one right way to build a bicycle, no one right way to design an automobile, no one right way to make a pair of shoes, but we're convinced that there must be only one right way to live, and the one we have is it, no matter what. So the supposition of the book is that you're a pig-headed asshole. I mean it's sort of like
I feel like there's only one way to build a bicycle.
certainly two tires have to be involved.
Yeah.
Or you've verged into tricycle territory.
And they have to be in a row, otherwise you'd fall right over.
See, already now there, I don't know. I could see a thing where there's like two tires, like a Segway.
Daniel Quinn, what are you doing here?
is a Segway a bicycle? It's got two tires.
No.
The inventor of the Segway would have you believe the Segway is not a bicycle. He would have in his book called Segway Adventures, he would have you believe that the Segway is a new invention. Maybe it's just a bicycle.
Right. So whose side are you on here? You,
Daniel Quinn's.
And you like him for being an iconoclast.
Yeah.
About...
I like him for asking questions, man.
Well,
I like him for sending a secret, crazy...
Is his book organized by question? Are there more questions?
Like, it's kind of... It's weird. It's
will,
like...
Will he ask me to rethink other things?
If you page through it and looked at it, it would look like it was like some like riddle book from the 80s.
I mean,
Each page is just like...
I'm looking over your shoulder. The bottom... fourth of every page is blank.
Yeah, it's because each page is just a thought that he had. Like one page, look.
Wait, show the audience.
Jeffrey.
Yeah, that's me.
And he often refers to some other book that he wrote. It says, in My Ishmael, that's a book that he wrote, I recounted the life of a young man named Jeffrey, loosely based on Paul Eppinger, whose journal was published by his father under the title Wrestling.
Right. Why is every bottom fourth of every page blank? For notes?
Because he finishes his shit, man. Because he gets his thoughts out.
Well, or otherwise the book's only like a pamphlet.
Daniel Quinn, if you're out there, thank you for the book. Thank you for sending it. I opened it.
Give me this book.
Daniel Quinn, please come down, undoubtedly from Canada. I'm 90% certain you're Canadian.
And defend this. Defend this use of paper. I'm looking at two pages where there's no more than 80 characters on the entire two pages. Okay. Part two, closing in on the process, .. And I'm going to come at this with an open mind, Dan.
Well, I mean, and don't.
I'm not mocking the person.
Well, yeah, and I realize, like when Eminem writes controversial rap lyrics, and they have somebody on CNN read
was defaced
rap
and
aloud.
Abandoned. The city's ultimate collapse. Whatever happened, the city was destroyed. The collapse may have been caused by. And this ellipses.
You're making him sound like a jackoff on purpose.
I'm
because it's unthinkable.
Science for abandonment. To think the impossible, think.
One of these days, I'm going to write a book, and it will be there. Many of the pages will be empty.
I don't know. Maybe. How about this? If every page is going to be equally blank for the bottom fourth or fifth of the page, make a shorter book.
Consolidate it. You're saying.
I'm saying cut the bottom fourth of the book.
Make it a little smaller. Well, by your logic, everything should be on microfiche.
I'm saying, as I flash through this, you could make.
No, there's certainly room down there to invite a Mad Magazine artist or something.
Yeah,
certainly there's new levels that could be added. That's definitely.
I don't know. That's probably not his fault. I think that would go to the publisher.
Right.
The publisher being
Daniel Quinn.
Wasty McPaperson.
All right, so we took a dump on some poor kid.
Is he a kid?
I imagine.
Okay.
I don't think you're 40 and you're doing stuff like that.
I don't know.
I think that's smacks of a 25-year-old's penetrative lunge into the world.
If I'm being hard on him, it's simply because, like, come on. Like,
all right. So we hazed the
You could end one 3-line poem and then start a new one, a couple lines beneath that, and keep the.
Did he write a poem in there? Read it,
Dan. This is page. Who the fuck knows? Because his pages aren't numbered.
Why page numbers?
I could get on board with that. Page numbers is just a way to tell a brother he's late.
How many tires should I?
All right. This is part four, toward the new tribalism. This is a 2.5 line little graffito. It says, "We are inclined to think of hunters and gatherers as poor because they don't have anything. Perhaps better to think of them for that reason as free." Wait, but then that's attributed to Marshall Solon, so he's just quoting people.
There's stuff he's come upon in his life that he wants to share with you.
All right.
And you're chastising him.
I should write a book.
All right. Okay. So can we please, what did we do? Now we all know what you shouldn't do. You shouldn't write a book like that. You shouldn't send it to us.
I say it's more in the publisher. The format is what's got me.
But I do think it's an interesting idea that we civilizations like bicycles or can openers or shoes are inventions. Right. They're systems that we have devised collectively. They're larger than shoes and can openers, but they're just little things that we invented. We've decided at some point that civilizations should resemble, they should have a certain shape to them. Because what do you do when your species becomes so successful that it's outbreeding the bears, wolves, and cats that used to eat it? What do? You form a civilization. You form rules. You build a big wall. We can't keep killing each other, gutting each other. We came up with a very, very thin, like, kind of detente. A long time ago, like let's not hurt each other. Holy shit! Let's love each other. Is it the right way? Do we think of each other in the right way? If we were to go to the moon, Jeff,
do you think that people think of each other as people that we shouldn't hurt or use or abuse?
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah,
I mean, I think if you look around at any,
no, we're doing terrible things to each other. Yeah,
at all times.
Yeah. But I think
and the only reason we stopped moving, we stopped hunting, is because we found out that if we started mastering metals and stone and masonry and things, we could insulate ourselves, that we didn't have to keep moving around. We could start making permanent dwellings, and that gave us leisure time. And that created things like art and created things like textiles and stuff like that. Also, it created the idea that men treated women like shit forever, like all kinds of other goodies.
Well, it would, yes. Okay. So there's an interesting, strange irony there, because it would seem that mankind kind of is very cruel to itself when we have shit on our plate. It always seems like there's a human impulse to be inhuman to each other when we have the excuse that we have so much shit to do. And then at the same time, strangely enough, gender-wise, it would seem like luxury begets abuses.
Yeah.
Doesn't it seem like the more dessert, the more free time we get,
I'm sure I'll get it like all the way wrong, because like I'm only like remembering things poorly. But like when things were like hunter gatherer, they tended to be matriarchal and tend to be feminine. And the moment that we started building permanent dwellings, it becomes patrilineal. If I'm going to build a thing, I'm going to pass it down to my male heir. And then women get pushed to the periphery.
It's almost like there's two different tracks that we feel on, because the history of this amazing country, just to look at that as a microcosm of it, the insanely poetically, tragically ironic fact that we built this country on slavery, which couldn't be a more inhuman act, that you take people from a different culture and you say to them, you are not human to us. We choose to use you to benefit ourselves, and we choose not to care about the happiness and health of you and your progeny. We choose, in fact, to breed you and herd you as if you were animals, and there's no other way to put it than that. And that is the true profanity of slavery. And to build a country on that, and then to come around and go, oh, you know what? We were wrong about that. Actually, boy, is anybody feeling nauseous about this? Yeah, right around the time that industry affords us the opportunity to replace these people with machines. Yes, we all start to feel nauseous about it.
But kicking and screaming.
And then give those people the vote. And then also, then after that, sometime after that, to say to women you are now also allowed to participate in who's president. There's all kinds of amazing things when you focus in on the
great modern cities, and I would include New York, but also like if you look like Antwerp and Brussels and like the great cities of Europe were built on treating people like a resource. People were murdered by the millions to make great cities, to create rubber, to get gold, to get like really basic things. That's why if you go to Antwerp and it's sexy, is because of just slaughter of 1,000 people. And then women got the vote later, which is fucking amazing.
Later, the women that the men who were hurting each other. The men can have epiphanies about inhumanity, and the entire time they're having those epiphanies, they can go home to bed with a woman that they are actively oppressing.
We were at the drawing room, and you like a couple weeks ago, and you said you were writing a thing for Vulture magazine or whatever. I was asking you about your 20. Cultural like references, right?
And there are no women on the list. Yeah,
you read a bunch of things, the things that informed you, and I made a joke. It's like, no women, huh? And you're like, oh shit, you're right. Like there were, but then you said like Elaine, what's her name?
Elaine Morgan.
Elaine Morgan, which may or may not be a cultural thing, but really is. But like what's your stance on like how do you perceive femininity as in culture? Like it's a pretty male thing. Our show tends to end up being a lot of dudes on stage and occasionally like a woman.
Well, that's the thing that I think is so fascinating about it, is that mankind has it within him to, he can take a white man can look at another man who has different cheekbones or different pigmentation, and he can make a he can switch some switch in his head and say, oh, well, I decide to dehumanize this person. I decide to commit the worst crime you can commit against another human being, which is to dehumanize them. I will in fact profit off of that dehumanization. I will switch off this thing in my head. I will abuse this person. Genocide. Just like truly the worst crime you could commit. And then in that sort of male stereotypical sense, like watching two guys fight at a bar where somebody breaks a bottle and they're slashing at each other, and then they work out something, and then they end up with their arms around each other. And then there's some weird elephant in the room where it's like, but none of you respect your women. And then gender politics still eludes us, I think. It's a really weird thing because no one wants to, you don't want to hear about it. It makes you feel more, it's harder to handle than racial politics. Because racial politics can come down to like some platitude about like, you go, oh, well, yeah, I had an epiphany this morning while brushing my teeth. My friend's darker skin than me. That doesn't make him less of a person. But you can't, so there are barriers you can't get beyond in your thinking about women. Your mom was a woman. If you had a wiener and your mom didn't, like, there may be shit that you're carrying into your adulthood. You may be punishing women for shit that you didn't know you don't know that you're doing it. Like they've suffered, man.
What is your relationship with women?
Ah, they're beautiful. They're a groovy bunch of chicks. I don't know. I don't know. It's totally I proposed to one, yeah. It's totally untapped for me. I really don't. It's uncharted territory.
Like you said. I just watched the most recent cut of the Harmon tour documentary, and you talk about the fact that like communicating with anybody, any stranger, even your friends, like it's always a crisis. Communicating with a stranger, extra crisis. How comfortable are women more strange to you than other men? Like it seems like you certainly seem to have like a relationship with women that's like a little more fearful.
I don't know. I more fearful than what? Than a 9 foot tall guy? Than a 4 foot tall guy? Than a guy in a wheelchair? Than a guy with a weird, really weird hat on?
Well yeah. To the extent that to create balance, the guy has to be 9 feet tall. Like.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Though that's the unexplored question of gender, because we have this tendency to simultaneously we talk about the human species as if it's just very neatly divided down the middle, gender wise. There's men and there's women, and then we have all of these. We have it out politically.
All right,
let's say nationality, but within all of these nations and all of these races, there's this. It's almost like the crime is committed and finished and gotten away with before it's ever called to court. Because let's face it, we all like are born into a world where we're trained to think about men and women as these.
Let's say you're in a writer's room and there are your equal number in terms of showrunners or whatever, and there's male writers and female writers. Do you not have an automatic opinion about or let's say there's a female writer in your writer's room. Do you carry anything into that?
Yeah, if there's one female writer in a room full of 10 male writers, I am distracted by how distracting things must be for her. I get distracted by that. That's why I would like it to be like half men and half women, and it rarely can be. So I find myself thinking about the two women. For instance, season 5 of Community, we had two female writers in the writers' room, and I find myself filtering things through their experience. Are we getting too abrasive? I know that female writers are not tender at all. That's not what I mean. Are we? But what would this look like on an affidavit later? It bears thinking, and which is why the easiest thing in the world, or rather the hardest thing to achieve, but then the easiest thing to maintain, is half and half. Represent the species in the writer's room, so that like if a single individual male writer has a tendency to thrust his chest out and get abrasive in his language, then he's got a proper amount of women to contend with.
There was a thing, I forget what year it was, somebody was telling me a story about I think there was a European Cup championship in like soccer, like football, proper football, and it was in the Netherlands, and I forget what countries were playing, but I think it was held in the Netherlands. And the Dutch police did a genius thing, because it was two countries that hate each other and tend to get pretty violent. The two different countries, like their fans, get a little hooligan-y, and all the cops, they put out women out in the streets, all Dutch female police. As this is a story I'm telling, like seventh hand, but no fighting, because there was just a bunch of women police out there, and nobody did anything. Nobody wanted to fight, and he was like, he didn't know if it was because they all wanted a picture with them, because they were all
hey, we're here at history.
But really, you just eliminated the fact that if you added more guys to that angsty, like wound up testosterone-y environment, if you added more guys with more agendas and more weapons on them. Not going to help. You just put a bunch of women in the mix and tempers it, because the idea that you have 1,000 guys in the fucking building together that have like agenda is going to be a fucking bummer. And that was like the greatest moment in police force history of just saying like, let's just have some femininity out there and cool out everything the fuck out.
Yeah, but you can offend somebody like so quick by talking about that, like the idea that they have a gender identity, that they put those women out there, and that had any kind of effect for any kind of.
Oh,
reason.
We wouldn't do it here because we'd be afraid that they get punched or something terrible would happen. I think they just did it because they had the idea that it would cool everything down. I don't know. Look it up, everybody.
It's so interesting to me because, like, we all know for a fact. We all know for an absolute fact.
Aaron, get at her. We need some women on stage.
Hello. I was squirming backstage because the reason why I initially really fell for you was your Dan was your what you said to me regarding how you felt about women and their
I said they were
approach
hot.
To things. you said to me that like that men were so violently opposed to funny men were opposed to funny women because they hated women because they were so threatened by them, because women were so dynamic and emotional and interesting and confident and weird, and men had a hard time with that.
You are making it sound like a guy that just wanted to get laid.
But do you remember that
I agree
conversation?
With all that. Yeah, sure. I don't remember.
Well, Dan said, "Hey, I think maybe I hate women," which obviously I was like turned off by, but someone saying like, "I think I hate women, but I think I hate them because I love them. I think I hate them because I want to be them, because I admire them, because I think that they're amazing, and I." I'm upset by that. And that was it.
But, okay, so gender is obviously the theme of the show tonight, which I think is important. Good.
Yeah.
Great.
Let's
if we go to the moon, okay, it's easy, not at the risk of offending any of our listeners of color.
Well, and is it gender or is it sex?
I don't. Well, I mean, I don't know.
Dan just made it race somehow.
But race is easy. Race is easy.
Yeah, we've proven that as a country.
What do you
give us 500 years? We'll figure it out.
I know that if you go to the moon and you want to start a new perfect civilization, I know that you make the roads straight. No, you disagree on that. You want a scenic view. You want blah blah blah. I'm saying
on the moon they're going to tend to be straight. There's less topography.
I want to do certain logical things. If I take a group of people to the moon and I start,
the roads are going to have to be straight and a grid the whole all over the moon?
Don't get too distracted by that.
The big reveal is that Dan and I got engaged. But Jeff and Dan got married.
I'm just saying that when one fantasizes, when one expresses their impulse, and this is a healthy impulse, to everyone in the audience, ask yourself, what would you do if you could start from scratch? Because then you might even actually be able to make a couple of those things happen down here. So what would you do about gender? What is it incumbent upon us? Because it's very, very easy to talk about race. Fact. Our nation was built on slavery. Fact. Most of the non-Caucasoid Americans, the African Americans, as we call them, which I think is a ridiculous phrase, they're descendants of a practice called slavery, which is not too long ago, where we built the entire country on them. And then we went, okay, we feel bad about this. Also, it's technologically appropriate. Let's weave this into society. These are easy facts to deal with, and you can easily deal with them, even though you can't easily deal with them politically and economically. You can easily deal with them philosophically by saying such simple, no one can argue with them things like, color, who cares? Easy. Easy peasy.
So as far as gender, do you mean...
Gender is not easy.
Why is
right,
that?
But like, what? But are you talking about the way that the government would address gender as far as like restrooms
kind
and
of well.
Marriage
well,
I mean, licenses? I, mean, like,
I don't know,
mean?
Yeah.
The fact that,
go.
Like, looking back for a very, very long time and what we consider like, wow, civilization, it's been gross white dudes controlling shit. And women have been pushed out of all fucking conversation at all times. In the times when I've like for instance, I've been on some on a television show where it's been run by all men, and the men on the that were the writers and the producers and the camera. So like, you hear arguments and you hear a bunch of fucking bullshit all day long. I've also been on shows where the front line was women. Women were the directors, camera, like first ADs and stuff like that. No fucking bullshit. Communication. They all fucking dealt with stuff. There was no less problems and no less like stakes. They just managed to deal with it in a much cooler way. I think you should involve women way more, instead of letting a bunch of guys like run everything, because it's gross and icky and a bunch of fucking cockfighting all the time.
Sure, but that would protest too much.
But
I protest too much about what?
Well, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a hero for saying that. It's just ridiculous, the idea that all of our statues are a bunch of dudes. And when we ever put a woman on a coin, it's ironic. Like, it's fucking hilarious. we live in a needlessly male world. It's so stupid.
But do you...
right, but we don't. But we don't.
But
we,
do
we
you...
do, but we...
Okay, but do you actually, like, is there, okay, fantasize in your head.
All right, I'm on a unicorn.
We're landing on the moon tomorrow.
Right.
There's a rocket ship full of 100 people.
Let's assume 40 unicorns.
Let's assume 50 men and 50 women. Let's assume that we're splitting it down the middle.
All right.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm making a mistake assuming that, but it's 100 people, 50 men, 50 women, biologically.
It should be 51-49.
When we are going to set up a school, we're going to teach children. We're going to there's going to be a new generation after we land on the moon and we pitch our tents and we do our thing. The idea is that the following generation is going to have a chance of being wiped clean of all kinds of shit, because that's all we've been trying to do down here forever. our funerals for various words, and our letters to TV Guide, and our fucking like we fantasize about a clean slate. And there's no better clean slate than a colony where you just take a select group of people and you just go, okay, so what are we gonna teach
really
these kids about?
These...
Are we gonna outlaw gender projection?
Well, that's my question. Do you mean like sexually it's 50 men and 50 women, or do you mean gender-wise it's 50 men and 50 women?
Well, before we even get into that, I think you're talking about the LA perspective, where it's like, are 10 of these people that are men that identify as women and blah, blah, blah. But I'm saying, like, let's just start simple. When we're teaching them the alphabet, when we're giving them toys, are we going to commit to the idea that children need to be programmed? And how do we know how to do that racially? We know that you just don't
vaginas.
Make children racist. We know that you just simply don't program children with racism, but we don't know yet how to not program children with gender politics.
Right.
We don't understand what that means. I don't understand what that means. What would you do in a neutral, sterile kind of colony? Are there pitfalls that you avoid? Kids like toys. What do you have to give them gender neutral toys? Do kids start to express gender? I listen to stories on NPR about kids expressing their gender, and it's when it's in an ironic capacity, when the kid is like, they're like, oh well, we wanted to support him, and but he wanted to do the thing and blah blah blah. Like we don't know what is politically correct right now, do we?
Right. Yeah. I think that real answer, if we were really going to the moon and we were really figuring this stuff out, I think that I would, which I think is what most parents do, is just follow whatever their kids want. I don't think that my parents were great, but I don't think that they were progressive in any way. And I know that when I was growing up, I played with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles within a Barbie house, but with no Barbies. And would cut off their hair,
so when were you? But when were
so
you?
So I think that like the real answer, like if we're sending everyone to the moon and everyone gets a kit and it's like a bag of Kit Kat bars. That's a terrible idea. There's a bag of Weetabix and cucumbers and tomatoes and eggs. And then for the kids, it would just be like a burlap sack that would have Matchbox cars, but also treasure trolls and dolls. The real answer is that like that's not that big of a deal, because like that doesn't identify anyone's sexuality, like what toys you play with, but making them available to everyone. I'm sorry.
All right.
We're engaged. You can't stop it.
I want to bring Kamel out. So let's bring
Kamel out.
Get his perspective as well.
Kamel.
Hello.
Who we should really be bringing out is Kamel's wife Emily. Like she specializes
shit.
In this
she's
stuff.
She's not here.
She?
Yeah. She had to drop me off. That sucks. She does specialize
but
in this
she,
stuff.
But she thinks about these things for a living, right?
Yeah, she tells me about it, but I don't listen. So. We're having fun. It is. By the way, was that book you guys were reading? That was Daniel Quinn?
Yeah.
Why? I know who...
Daniel Quinn?
I just read one of his books in college, and I hated it. I hated it so much. It's called Ishmael was his book. And
oh,
it's about this
he
gorilla.
Refers to it in that book.
Yeah, no, he's up his own ass. I don't want to get off topic, but Ishmael is about this gorilla that teaches this guy like the right way to live and civilization is fucked up. And it's basically, he's sort of advocating that we don't help other countries and just kind of let them die when they get diseases. Anyway, it's... That
for
really
real?
Is,
that's this guy?
Yeah, this piece of...
See, I didn't like the book based on format. I like finding out that you don't like him for real reasons.
Yeah, there's so much to hate about it.
I thought it was poetry from far away.
It's written, and you look at it and you think, oh, it's like he's E.E. Cummings. He doesn't care about format. Well, also, E.E. Cummings had fucking content.
Also, it was Anthropology 101, and everyone else in the class was blown away by this book and how it changed their lives. And I really, really had such a visceral negative reaction to
There's
it.
There's a chapter in here that says, I eat bets. I'm just saying.
So, Camille, are you and Emily going to have kids? Sorry to pry.
I hope so, unless, you know, one of
the
our
The rest
shits...
of that sentence was, with us?
Is this a new thing?
Well, you've heard of these kid partnerships, right?
No.
You find another couple who you admire.
It's like a key party.
Yeah, it's like a key party.
But with kids?
But it's forever.
Like, we'll raise our kids for the night.
It's right. called a womb blast.
Yeah.
And you just switch babies?
No. We just say to you, so Camille and Emily, like, you guys are having kids?
Yeah, you have your own kid, but then after a while, it's our kid.
And our kid is
if
your
we
kid.
Like it.
Oh.
It's called a womb blast. And we have parties, and we all hang out together. It's basically like a play date, but just, like, more
forever.
Official. Yeah, yeah.
No, but I, the reason
yes,
I asked,
we are, I think, and if our stuff works, we will have a kid, yeah.
So we're talking about gender politics. Politics doesn't even work as a word for the issue at hand.
What
does gender mean? How much is gender an artificial construct in a world where we've started to understand that race is an artificial construct? Like, how much do we owe it to ourselves to think of gender as an artificial construct?
I don't get. I don't. Maybe I'm just being thick right now. I don't understand what your hang-up is. Like, what's the
like gender roles, right?
Yeah, but
my hang-up is that in the 1950s, if you were to take your kid into the garage and close the garage door and train the kid to be racist. We now know through the lens of 2014 how to recognize what you're doing right and wrong with the child.
Yeah.
We can actually, in a sort of empirical sense, we can define bad child rearing to the extent that you're raising your child to be conscious of race.
So what's your concern about having a child?
My question is, how does that work with gender?
Emily has friends, they're... lesbian, and they have a kid, and they are raising the baby gender neutral, and the baby is female, and you know the baby has a female name. But what they're doing is nothing is blue and nothing is pink, and it's not dolls and it's not action figures. So the baby's playing with toys that a boy or a girl could play with, but it's hard because they asked, you know, Emily's mom, who's very close to the couple, they asked to give the kid gender-neutral stuff. And so the mom bought her, my mother-in-law, and she was trying her best. She just couldn't, she bought her, like, a flower bow that was purple instead of pink.
Right.
And she said, so purple is like a male color.
But this is this is a key issue. Toys R Us. You walk into it. Aisle 3, aisle 4, aisle 5, aisle 6, aisle 7. They're based on ages of children. They're also based on genders of children. I don't know if they've tried, so if you're a same-sex couple, your lesbian friends are having a kid, they make the decision, we're going to have a gender-neutral child. We're not going to fuck with this child gender-wise. We're not going to. Now, they're also in this larger, colony.
Yeah, sure. It's impossible to avoid.
What extent
the thing is more about not saying because the kid is playing with trucks that they're gay or straight or male or female.
Nobody's doing that to a kid. Nobody. Somewhere out there might be going, "Hey, faggot, stop playing with that truck."
I mean, I'm sure that's not the right.
That's a very straight thing to do.
Very in vogue to give kids both things. I'm sure there are kids here. I'm sure there are people here who have young children. Does anyone here have kids?
Perfect. Yeah, that feels right.
Oh, someone back there has kids.
So you
with your hands, like as a nanny in Los Angeles, and maybe this is different in other places, but like it's very uncool to suggest to a child that they should be playing with a certain thing. But kids tend to be attracted to one or the other, but it doesn't mean anything.
But I do think it comes from, like you said, the larger society. It's almost impossible to raise a kid completely gender neutral because, as you said, there are these sort of roles and things, and that's just how it is. Like,
kids marketed to give boys. Them both things. There's two things.
But it's going to be hard even when the kid goes to school and it's like, oh, the boys play with the things that murder and the girls play with things that have great shoes, you know? So. But that is going to happen. I mean, we're conditioned. When you're a kid, look at the fucking commercials for kids' toys on TV. Like, it's all sort of, you know, it's either one or the other. And that's really...
But the thing to do is that if your little girl is playing with trucks and is talking about murdering cowboys or whatever, is to not say, well,
you let her murder cowboys.
Maybe I'm talking about myself. But the thing is to not, like, the gender, the quote-unquote gender-neutral thing is to not say, oh, well, this child, she's a lesbian, like, at 4 years old. Well, she's clearly a lesbian. She likes these trucks. She doesn't like these dolls, she whatever. It's just about allowing kids to do whatever, because in the, previously, when a little girl would play with a truck, that was bad. They would take the truck away and vice versa.
Do you take your kid through Toys R Us and let the kid...
Yes, which is not a crazy idea.
No, that's probably how it's...
They get to play with whatever.
And that's a good small
step. So you sort of let the kid be the guide. But we are living within a dichotomy, though.
The kid is being guided by other stuff other than the parents. And it's good that the parents are trying. I remember specifically at some point being like, I'm going to learn to walk more manly. I remember thinking that, and no one told me or made fun of me of the way I walked, but, I mean, look at me walk. I walk fucking manly now. But I remember that pressure came, and it, even if nobody tells you, it's all there. It is a dichotomy.
Dan and Aaron, like, you guys are engaged. You're going to be married probably within a year or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you already thinking about kids? Have you talked?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that where this comes from? Any part of this conversation or no?
No, I don't know why we're talking about gender. The guy gave a book. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I'm riffing.
Is the guy that guy's not in the crowd? Is he the guy who wrote that book?
I hope, if he was, he left. Okay. let's say you guys had a kid, and let's say it was pick at random, guy or girl.
Guy.
Okay, so you had a boy.
Uh-huh.
How would you approach that? What would be your... Would you have a...
Slowly, carefully.
I would lovingly fondle his privates.
I would kiss his balls.
Am I already doing it wrong?
He was great.
What if it's a girl?
I would call him King Harmon.
As long as you would lovingly fondle her privates, too. Like as long as it's equal.
Yeah.
It's called a wraparound, Jeff. With a baby, it's called a wraparound.
I have a million questions. I would be very happy with if I was blessed enough that we were able to conceive a child.
What would your first choice be, boy or girl?
I honestly, first choice.
If you had to pick.
Let's say on the count of three.
You had to pick.
Lately.
One.
Lately.
Two.
I've been thinking. I'd rather have
three,
a girl.
Boy.
Because all I can do is be ironic, and the circumcision issue weighs very heavy on me.
Oh yeah, really? That's tough. I wouldn't want my son to go through that. Well, or my daughter.
Well, we could take our daughter to Guana and get her circumcised.
Oh, I know some places here.
And I feel like same sex children tend to target. In puberty, they target the same-sex parent.
Been reading a lot of Homer.
I like the idea of just having a little girl that's like daddy's little girl and starts to hate you when she's 12. And yeah, I'm like, come on, take it easy on your mom. She tries hard.
I mean,
instead of the old slug out on prom night.
All right, but Dan,
no, fuck you, old man!
Dan,
Dan, let's say you had a boy. Let's say you had a boy, and it's like he and his, like, it's time for Little League or soccer or whatever. Like
yeah, fuck you. Yeah.
Little satchel.
No, I look for, I would love to have a little boy, and I know that the way karma works is I will have a kid and he will be very into football. I know that.
But there's nothing wrong with that. I think
it's fine.
I wasn't ever good
at
sports.
I'm psyched about football. Like already I'm like psyching myself up about football for my kid's sake. And he'll never see a typewriter.
He won't be able to read.
Because they don't exist anymore, wasn't it?
It'll be a little secret I keep.
I felt afraid on many occasions of having a girl.
Yeah, you should. They're terrible.
See, now we're getting to it.
They're terrifying people.
I mean, I know this is...
But they love their dads.
I said, well, not necessarily. Shout out to my dad, who I love very much. who very much wants to perform our wedding.
Perform at your wedding or perform...
No, because my dad is a preacher. He wants to...
Oh, he's a preacher.
Yeah.
He wants to officiate the wedding?
And we will not allow him to officiate the wedding. Because he's so great.
Because you don't want...
he's so good at being a wedding officiant that you feel like you don't deserve it.
I've always felt, since I was very young, when my dad would randomly say, like, well, I'll perform your wedding. I've always felt really weird about
that. He says perform?
Yeah, you perform a wedding.
That's performed like a rite.
My dad has performed hundreds of weddings.
All right, so hey, if you have a kid...
But really quick on this subject, and I'm so sorry, but I was a nanny in L.A. for many years. Not a parent. But the gender thing, like, becomes really unimportant. Like...
Yeah, in L.A., like, when everyone's rich and everyone can do whatever they want. No, I'm talking about we're starting a colony. How do you approach things logically? I'm saying, what's the right thing to do? We're all well aware, as Adam Goldberg very succinctly said, we're in L.A., it's been cool to be gay here for 80 years.
I think
we do live in a bit of a bubble, progressively speaking.
I think the thing is to detach gender identity from trucks and dolls and whatever, because everyone is... Like, little kids are attracted to so many different things, and it doesn't mean any sort of thing.
Okay, but... The bottom line is that the kid... Like, you kind of... You take a bifurcated approach. You buy a dump truck and a Barbie doll, and you put them in front of them.
Oh no! Or you get also board games. You know, like I think
you do. You just
I don't think
board games.
You know, in my head, that was the most general neutral thing I could think of.
Everyone puzzles, jigsaw games. Puzzles,
jigsaw puzzles. Yeah.
Well, like my brother and my brother Bill and his wife Jill. They have
Bill and Jill.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Ask Jeff what
adorable.
His mother's name was.
Phil.
No.
My mother's name was Phil. No. My mother's name was Betty Ann Larson, and she married Dwayne Davis. She became Betty Davis.
Betty Davis.
And it suited her because she was a grand diva. But like my brother and his wife, my sister-in-law, they raised their daughter. They didn't want to give her princess costumes before she was too old to choose them.
Sure.
Like no overtly girly stuff. As time has passed. Maddox, my niece, has just absolutely on her own. She doesn't watch TV. She doesn't watch any commercials. She has never watched TV. She does not know. Like, they asked her, what do you want for Christmas? She was, or for your birthday? She's she just turned 5. They said, what do you want? She goes, a new water bottle.
Water.
To take to school.
Water.
Because she doesn't watch. She's not inundated with advertising.
Practical.
That says you should have this ridiculous thing or this incredibly
sure.
feminine thing or male thing or whatever the fuck. But on her own terms, she has started dressing up like princesses and fairies because she's into that, and that was never put on her. She has just gravitated towards costumes. And what they made for her 5th birthday was a big wardrobe, and they filled it with costumes. Gender neutral, male, female, there's cowboys, cowgirls, princesses.
They give her water.
Is that what she was asking for?
They listened to her. They gave her latitude, and gradually, as she became... she's a very advanced, like, she was advanced 2-year-old, she was advanced 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old. She very clearly made her own decisions about what she would like to walk around
but
the house.
I bet if we didn't make kids choose, I would have chosen a dress too. Like, they're so much prettier.
Well, they're pretty.
Also, look at those eyelashes. Holy shit.
Yeah, I know, right?
My mother very clearly, I really feel like my mother hoped that I was a girl. Because she had 2 girls in her first marriage, and then she married my dad, and my brother was the first born, and that marriage was a boy. He was my father's boy more, and then when I came along, I really feel like I was supposed to be a girl.
Yeah.
So much of my childhood was spent dressed in tights and dancing and doing things like that, and I really feel like I ought to have been a girl as far as my mom was concerned.
I didn't get it out of my system until I came here, and my first 3 Halloweens, I dressed as a woman. That was my costume.
What were the costumes? Just woman?
Just me wearing a gown.
Just lady.
I was just a lady. In a frat way?
Well, because there are always frat guys who are dressing as girls.
I felt very pretty. I didn't feel like a frat guy.
You have no frat element to you. You know what I mean?
There's a thing when I was in high school, college. There was a thing where girls loved to put me in women's clothing, they just like to dress certain friends of theirs up. But they always loved to put me in women's clothing. I was always totally fine with it.
Kind of a turn on, right?
if it's a turn on for them, it's fine. It didn't really ever mean anything to me. I didn't do it on my own. But however, I love dressing up as a woman. It's great. It's fucking. It feels fine. I just don't see why you would force it on. What's the point of putting on a child that there's an idea that you have to do one way?
I don't think
the other
anyone would do it unintentionally. Intentionally.
I mean,
I
grew up in Los Angeles. I was taught how to throw. My dad taught me how to throw a curveball and a changeup and a slider and all this stuff. And I learned how to do all this manly stuff. Also, I was dancing. I got so much femininity and so much masculinity, and not in any dogmatic way on either side. I'm the product of a very Los Angeles lifestyle. I grew up in
a theater.
Because
you were doing all those plays and because you were in The King and I, did your dad ever do any sort of hey?
No, I mean, I had friends when I was 4 years old. I had, there was a guy that directed the first play I was in. He was very clearly, even to a 4-year-old me, I knew that he was a queen. He was a big, flouncy, Oscar Wilde-y, awesome, grand theater queer. He was awesome. And he was my mother's friend throughout her entire life until she died. And he was a part of my life. And I grew up in the theater. And they were clearly people that, before I knew what sexuality was, before I'd ever had an erection, before I knew what the difference between male and female anatomy was, I did know that there were people in my life that weren't the way I was supposed to be. My parents weren't dogmatic about it. I became the most homophobic person in the world because of the theater. Because my parents weren't homophobic, my parents weren't dogmatic, but I feel like I must have talked about this in the show before, or maybe not. I was 9 years old, or even younger. I had dressers, and they were the great, late 70s, early 80s queens, and they'd make out in front of each other in front of me. And I asked my hairdresser when I was 9 or 10.
Your hairdressers would make out in front of you?
Yeah, yeah.
Were you getting terrible haircuts?
No. You're getting made up before a play.
Oh, okay.
I was on Broadway. I was 10 years old, and I had a dresser and a hairdresser.
Wait, what? You were on Broadway?
Yeah, we've talked about
The King
before.
And I. Yeah.
No, I did not know this.
With Yul Brynner.
What is your life?
So I was on The King and I with Yul Brynner when I was a kid, and so I had a.
That's fucking crazy. With Yul Brynner?
Yes.
Yeah, Kumail, you've never seen a sexier kid.
Shit, dude.
So I had this dresser named Gordon who was great, and he was so funny. And he would the costumes were really hard to get in and out of. There's tons of hooks and snaps and shit like that. And there were all these old, really ridiculous old costumes. And then a guy that he was kind of dating was his hairdresser guy that would come in, and they would just French kiss in front of me. And I was 10, and then 11. And I asked the younger guy, who was probably in his mid 20s, I said so did you know you were gay all the time? Did you always know you're going to be gay? He goes, oh, no, I didn't know until I was 18. I was oh! Wait, don't say that!
That could happen to you.
Say you always knew. Because not that I felt like I was ever going to get punched or beaten or ostracized if I did grow up to be like a good, like 70% of the people in that production were gay. And sadly and absolutely truly, almost all of them dead. Because, like from AIDS, like because that was this
well,
was,
I mean, that was a big yeah, crazy.
This was the like the early days of that.
Like, what was it? 80s?
Yeah, this is 84, 85. I was in that show, and like most of that production is gone, including I think these guys. And so I this guy told me, he's like, no, like I thought I was straight until I was 18. I got so homophobic and so worried about that only because of my like.
Being gay is hard, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and you wouldn't choose it as a young boy. With yeah. like, and I was literally taken off the pitcher's mound to go audition for The King and I, embarrassingly so by my mom. And so when I went home at night, and if the last thing I did before I went to bed was close a magazine and it was a picture of a guy, I would keep looking until there was a picture of a woman. But to the point of like mania, and if I was watching TV, I would turn the TV off, and if right last second was a guy, fuck, turn it back on, and wait until there's a picture of a woman, because if the last image in my mind was a picture of a man, that being straight or gay was this toss of the coin, and I
maybe knew, that's what that guy did. He turned the TV off when it was a guy at 18.
Well,
he turned gay
as a 10 or 11 year old. That was the world that I thought we lived in. And then one day when I was 12 years old, like laying in bed, I just went, "Oh, I like women."
Yeah,
and went to bed and never did that again. But that wasn't because anybody told or beat it out of me or whatever. But there was a big point in my life where I felt like I really had to come to grips with the fact that like I might not know this until I'm much older than I am right now, and that will be okay. But it won't be okay because it's fucking hard. You'll get treated like shit. You'll get pushed around.
Well, this is something that you're able to articulate at the age of 40, looking back on it, because it's as clean cut as straight versus gay, and that's what I'm talking about. Because we're entering a world now where we're becoming increasingly conscious of the pressures of gender identity, and it's not as clean cut as straight or gay with gender identity. You don't know how feminine you're allowed to be or supposed to be, or how masculine you're allowed to be or supposed to be. This isn't about straight or gay. Straight or gay comes down to that's our struggle to turn gender politics into something as clean cut as racial politics, because you're skin is brown or your skin is white and you had sex with a man and put your mouth on his penis or you didn't. We have friends of Harmontown who come up here who look like dudes and act like dudes and identify as women in their hearts and their minds. And it's incumbent upon us. I'm just curious, as a guy who's thinking about having a kid in this new world, and also as a philosophical thought exercise, I'm asking the question, like, it doesn't, like, look what goes through the young brain.
Yeah.
Look what
yeah.
carries through to the 40-year-old adult about when you felt like gender was being projected onto you, your sexual roles and stuff.
I went to the King and I dressing room. There was the dancers' dressing room. There was the women's dressing room for the dancers, the chorus, and the men's. And I would say there's probably about 20 or 25 apiece. And in the men's dressing room, there were only a couple straight guys in that. Most of the dancers were gay guys. And they always had, kind of ironically, wherever we traveled, we did like 13 cities together, there'd be two calendars next to each other. One was a calendar of all like hot like firemen and like naked dudes, and then one of naked women, but it was only for one or two guys.
Sure.
And it was like, it was always like they did it like out of equality. And so I was 10 years old, and my friend, my understudy Luke, we went down.
You had an understudy.
I had.
That's fucking crazy.
I had
dude.
Seven understudies because they wouldn't let us not do the show. That's a whole other story. They would, like, even when I was sick and I chipped a whole front tooth off and I lost my voice, they would not let you not go on, even though you wanted your understudy to go do it. They wouldn't let the principal.
You were just so good.
No, they just had this weird climate of they did not want the understudies to go out there.
He was also, Camille, have you seen a picture of Jeff as a kid?
No, I mean,
meow.
I'm scared.
Is there anybody in the audience? I would imagine.
I wasn't knowing the story, real quick. So I walked in with Luke down there, and we were looking at he and I were both looking at the only like we weren't exposed to a lot of pictures of naked women, so we saw these calendars. It was right next to a like naked guys, and then there was the naked girls, and we're looking at them. And there was a dude in the fucking cast, God bless him, a Hawaiian guy named Kaipo, who was just as gay as a day in May. He was so fucking... but he would always kind of harangue us. And he's like, hello, Jeff. I know which calendar you're really looking at. Like, I was like Kaipo,
like, I'm 10 Kaipo, years old.
I'm fucking 10.
Inappropriate.
He gave me a fucking lighter one time. He and this dude, Stanley, gave me a fucking lighter, and it had a lighter cover. Like, it was a regular Bic lighter, but it was inserted into a penis that you could flip the head of the penis off and open and light the cigarette. And Kaipo was like, Jeff, could you get this out? I can't get it out. It's stuck. He just sat there and watched. I didn't get the joke. I was just struggling with this fake plastic penis, trying to... And they sat there giggling. And then like halfway through, I'm like, oh, you motherfuckers. Like it was the theater. They treat you like an adult, but it was fucking open season on sexuality there.
Yeah, I feel like for me, having a kid is so scary anyway. I think you do the best you can, and... I mean, it's a job. Everybody has wonderful parents, right? And we all have problems with them. We're all signing up for a job that no one in history has ever nailed. No one's ever gotten it exactly right. And we're like, yeah we're going to fucking try it. We're going to be the ones.
All right.
You know what's crazy is Christmas shopping at Target and walking down the aisles. I was looking for a catchphrase game because we were going
gender-neutral toy, yeah.
Gender-neutral. And just seeing, because all my friends who have kids are raising their kids, quote unquote, gender neutral, which I guess just means letting your kid follow whatever they'd like, which I think most parents do. But the rows for girls, pink, like really pink.
It's crazy.
And then the rows for boys are black and blue. Like they it really feels like you have to choose between the two.
It's so strong.
It's weird.
I remember always my life until I was like in my 20s being very obsessed with seeming masculine. And I was like a little kid. I was skinny.
Show us the walk. Show us the walk.
Oh, I don't know. No. I remember... I was like, the key to having a good walk is to act like you don't give a shit what your walk looks like. So I would give a shit about having a walk that looked like I didn't give a shit.
Do you know how old you were?
I was probably 12 or something.
When I was 8, I felt like I was too masculine, so I created a laugh that was more feminine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
Oof. Well, have you seen Looney Tunes? Yeah, have you seen the Looney Tunes witch when she leaves hairpins behind? I saw that and I thought that was a height of femininity for some reason. So my laugh that I created was really.
Bummer. I remember there was this dude Eugene who was like the funniest dude in 7th grade. And then he went away for the summer, and then he came back, and he decided that he was going to be like Eddie Murphy, and he had affected this laugh. I was so bummed out, because Eugene was so funny, such a nerdy, funny dude, and then he came back all sexy, drenched in cologne, doing this Eddie Murphy laugh. Is there anybody in our audience, and it's fine if the answer is no, let it slide a little. We'll bring up Spencer and we'll continue to have a great evening. But I'm just curious, like, you know, in this Los Angeles audience, is there anybody that can speak from the surf of gender? Somebody that's had a discomforting upbringing, like somebody that can talk about... give us more information than we have, because we've been pontificating about how you're supposed to raise a kid and what you're supposed to imprint on them gender wise. Is there anybody out there that sort of, you know, went back and forth or existed in between, you know, had a weird experience, or anyone that is willing to come up and talk about it? You're willing to come up and speak for a little bit?
Yeah, come on up.
Sarah.
I'm gonna stand. I've never had like a gender identity crisis with myself, but I feel like my parents did. Like, they didn't think I was girly enough. My mom was really upset because I didn't want to wear makeup and things like that, but this whole conversation, I've kind of been hearing that it feels to you like gender neutrality is something that you have to work for with a kid, and it's sort of like the opposite of the default, which is trucks and dolls. But the gender system, in my view, the gender system that we have is just as much of a construct as making something gender neutral. Right. It's just like it's beyond trucks and dolls. Like it manifests.
Like gender neutrality would also be an artificial construct.
Yeah, but it would be one that gives more choice, because the gender system we have now takes that choice away. And the problem that I have with the gender system we have now is not just like, okay, maybe if you let a boy not know he's a boy or what being a boy means, maybe he'll want to play with guns and trucks anyway, and a lot of little boys do. But it manifests in like everything in your life. Like I'm constantly coming up against this like realization that I don't think I can do something because I'm a girl.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'm fully aware of that. And like just one example that I can't stop thinking about is this motherfucker with his feet on the stage. Like that's not like something girls
you think if you
do.
Did that as a girl, you're thinking like somebody would go, "Hey, bitch, get your feet off the stage."
No, no, no.
I think that about him constantly. He is way out of line putting his feet on the stage.
I would never see a girl do that. No matter how like pulls out, like
no
aggressive.
Matter how pink Anatoly's shoes are, they're still all over us.
No,
stage
he doesn't.
Right,
he's Russian. It's a whole different thing.
Oh, is it?
Well, and it feels very phallic.
No,
right?
But continue, please.
Yeah. That's it. It's things like that, and you know, just kind of thinking like, man, why don't I feel like I can do a thing? Because and then I realize, and then it makes a real difference seeing people that look like you do stuff you want to do.
Sorry, may I ask how old you are?
23.
Cool. Sarah Silverman, in her new special, has this great quote. I'm just gonna say it. She said, "Don't tell little girls they can do whatever they want to do, because it would never have occurred to them that they couldn't." And I think just having to tell girls that they could be like whatever they want to be comes from such a place of, you know, mm-hmm. where there are certain things that you feel don't feel comfortable doing.
Yeah. When you say people that look like you, what does that mean to you?
It means gender, it means sex, it means race, it means everything. And it's a kind of thing where like again, I don't consciously think about it all the time. Like when I look at a stage and there's only men on it, I don't usually think like, oh man, it's all men, they don't look like me. But then if a woman comes on stage, I feel relieved, and I didn't realize that I was holding my breath.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel.
Because where were you raised? In
the Bay Area.
In the Bay Area, okay.
Yeah.
And that's pretty progressive, right?
It's a pretty progressive place, yeah.
So Sarah, do you get bummed out when sometimes I just... Do you come to the show a lot?
This is my second time. I just moved here.
Cool. do you ever, because I feel self-conscious about this, do you ever feel bummed out that I just talk about being a girl or kind of like...
No, I'm so glad.
All right, thanks,
Sarah.
It
makes me feel good. it feels weird to, you know, it would have been really weird if they had this whole discussion and you didn't come on stage. It would have been glaring, really.
Do you think that when you look back on your childhood, do you think about... So you're raised in the Bay Area by parents who are, what were they trying to do gender-wise to you? Were they on a mission?
They were just trying to do what they thought was normal, which is what everybody else is trying to do. But it was like, I remember I always just wanted, because I have an older brother, and I just always wanted to do everything he wanted to do. My parents mm-hmm. didn't really put much on me until, you know, like puberty. And then they were like, are you a lesbian? You know, like. Yeah. They just thought it was weird that I didn't hang out with boys that they didn't see. I don't know.
I had the same thing, yeah.
That was when it started to... Because they were like, all right, you're a kid, whatever, play with blocks. But then after a while, I began to see concern with them, and I didn't really understand why.
Did they ever discourage you from doing anything that was, like, gender exclusive?
No, they just thought I was autistic, I think. it wasn't gender. We had a lot of problems, but most of them were not gender-related.
Right, yeah.
My mom was very like, I thought I was raising you to be a feminist. And like when I would do things, she didn't think, she would kind of use like, I thought you were supposed to be a strong woman. I was like, I don't know what that means.
I think in a way, maybe this is totally wrong, but I feel like for girls, it's a little more weird because the girl things are so girly. They're so babies. They're so pink houses. They're so everything. Whereas boys, like, they're trucks and they're models and all these different things. So like it for girls, it's a little weirder to
But I also do think girls get to have a little more variance. Like a little girl playing with a truck is okay, but a little boy playing with a
yeah,
Barbie
no, you're
is
right,
gay.
You're right. Yeah, that's totally.
I
correct.
Feel like
yeah.
the deck is that's... stacked. Well, God, I feel like the deck is stacked against girls a little more because if a boy doesn't have to put on a pink chiffon dress in his upbringing in order to be perceived as being less masculine. A boy gets more leeway. A boy is allowed to be, for instance, smart, a nerd. Like I feel like if a girl like Marie Curie, I feel like if she was like more interested in looking through a microscope than her coming out party, I feel like she gets more punished than her male counterpart.
That is true. I mean, it's being a guy is
the best.
Yeah. I mean, it's so everything's in our favor.
But we're all very familiar with the term tomboy, but we don't have the same thing for a
exactly.
For a,
that's
for a
my
boy.
Point. Yeah.
At my my niece's fifth birthday party, like in December, she has all these costumes, and most of them are little girl costumes, and so because they're for her. And so there were a bunch of other kids there, but they were all but one of them was they were boys. So there was four boys there, and there was only one male like outfit to put on. So all of the guys were running around dressed like Cinderella and princesses and shit.
And I bet they felt great.
And the thing is, nobody gave a shit. The parents, there's a moment of like, okay, this is the first time anybody's ever seen anything like this. But all the little boys were running around. These 4 and 5 year old, 6 year old boys were all running around dressed like Pocahontas and shit, and it was hilarious. And they all they didn't give a fuck.
Yeah,
and because they're playing cowboys natural. And Indians. But if you're a little girl, and you go into your brother's like things and it's all cowboys and Indian stuff, you're not the little girls aren't allowed to dress up like a cowboy. Or in any, they have to dress up like a damsel and whatever. Yeah. But it was all the parents were sitting around, just watching my niece Maddox enforce that all the boys dressed up in these princess outfits, and nobody gave a fuck. And it was like everybody just like everyone's shoulders relaxed. They go like, okay, yeah. It's all gonna be all right because like this is as it should be, and it was nobody was enforcing anything, and the boys didn't lose any credit among yeah. each other or in front of anybody.
Emily worked at this facility in I don't want to say where it was, but it was like one for, because she's a therapist, it was for like bad kids, but these were like bad kids, like 13-year-olds who'd stabbed people and like done a bunch of drugs and stuff, so they were all like sort of very obsessed with seeming like, you know, hard and tough. And because there was all just guys there, the kids would end up like fucking each other. And then they would have these sort of crises. They would come to Emily, be like, "I think I'm gay," and Emily would be like, "Well, not necessarily. You might be, but also, just you know, you just have to get this out." One time, she heard these two kids were snuggling, and they weren't allowed to go home for Christmas. And it was these two like really rough and tumble, like 14-year-olds. And she heard them whisper. One guy said to the other, "He's like, Merry Christmas, baby." And I think that's what they sort of...
Was it Lou Rawls?
It became... Yeah. It became a safe environment to kind of do whatever they wanted to do and not have to have a label on it, you know? And I think that sort of was weirdly kind of freeing for them.
Yeah, I think you are 100% right when you say that it's not cool for boys to be girly, but... Boys are really rewarded for being funny and goofy and
sure,
like
yeah.
putting on girls' outfits and whatever else. Like it's not like for girls,
just talking a lot.
Yeah, or just talking a lot. It sounds like Sarah had the same experience that I did, where their parents were kind of panicked over the way that you were interacting with the world, and were worried that like you weren't going to be. I know for sure. Like my mom had an actual conversation with me that was about me not being pretty enough, or like me not being pretty or losing weight, or et cetera, et cetera. Like everyone feels really panicked when they see a girl playing with trucks, because it's like, oh my God, like their value, like what is their...
And also,
which
like,
might not be true now as much, especially not.
But
in
it
Los
still
Angeles.
Is. I mean, when was the last time you heard a guy being called mouthy? You know, you don't really hear that. but there's these certain words that are sort of, they're so ingrained, and they are used to sort of denigrate women. You know, like Emily, this will happen all the time. Emily and I host this video game podcast. It's called The Indoor. Kids listen to it. It's great. But whenever I fuck up a video game fact, they say, Emily fucked up a video game. It always goes on her. Wow. Every single time. And they also tell her to relax all the time, which, like, fucking drives me nuts. But that's another thing. Like, the way God...
Well, Emily's a bitch.
She is a mouthy bitch.
No, Emily is 100%.
It's interesting, because you notice there aren't any equivalents. You know how there aren't, like, racially, like, you have... the N-word, you have the height of profanity when there's a group that is not part of the ownership class, and then we joke about how there's no, what are you going to call us, a cracker, honky, those words don't matter.
Well, it doesn't work because
there
of the
is
power
no,
differential.
There
yeah.
is no, you can call, the. You can say bitch, you can say the C-word.
Sure.
You can say, there's like five words that you can use to indicate Name. That a woman is out of line.
Yeah.
And when a guy is really out of line, it's the same words because you impugn their gender.
Yeah.
I am the biggest offender of that. Like I emasculation.
Well, that's
when
a big insult.
When you really,
yeah.
really, really disapprove of a fella.
Yeah.
I find myself emasculating
little bitch,
them
yeah.
linguistically. Yes. Yeah. That they are a C word, that they are a T word, that they are
What's
a,
the T word?
Twat.
I don't think it's
so
common
that?
Enough that you could just say T word and we know what you're talking
I thought,
about.
I thought it was titty face.
I went with titty too.
Titty.
There's like, not a lot of like, what do you do? From there you get into homophobia. You could call a guy
sure.
a cocksucker.
So then,
That's
Dan, what does
do.
That mean when you say
For
that sure. to a woman? What does that mean?
What do you no? Well,
I mean, if it's about emasculation,
well, it's the same as the N-word. It means you're dehumanizing them. If you call a woman okay. the C-word, you're
and if you call a guy the C-word, you're making
you're
him
saying,
like a woman, which
you're
is
an
the
adorable
worst thing you
British
can say.
Man.
Yeah. Well, they just say it all
like
the time.
Stop being right. a. Yeah. Anyways, you're probably uncomfortable standing up here.
Oh no, I'm. Can I say something
of
before
course.
I sit down?
Please.
I'll get off.
You've
I,
earned it.
I promised my friend Eric that if I got up and got to talk, I would talk about him because he loves you. He's in love with you. His name is Eric Krasner. I'm talking about him. He's going to listen to the podcast. He's going to be so psyched. He's one of my best friends. He's amazing.
Sounds like a queer.
Yeah.
Thank you,
right,
Sarah.
Everybody.
Thank you, Eric. I'm the worst.
Yeah, it's like Sarah's experience is not. Like,
what was her name? Where did she go?
Sarah. Oh,
Zara.
Sarah.
Is it with
Thank
a Z?
You.
No, an S.
Sarah.
Yes.
Wait, where are your parents from? Some other place? I don't know how else to put it.
Other than the Bay Area.
It's Sarah, not Sarah.
I'm Iranian.
You're Iranian. Okay. Your parents got away from the Islamic Revolution.
No.
Nice.
Do you speak Farsi?
A little bit. Did you grow up here? Or yeah.
We made you sit down, then we started interviewing you. See, how sexist is that? Sit down, we'll talk to you from a distance.
It's not a good show. It's not a good show.
By applause, how many girls here had kind of like a similar experience where their parents were weird about their... Yeah, humble applause. Our parents did that to us.
Well, once you get that, I'm sure a bunch of the guys here had, I'm not dismissing it. I'm saying like, that's a thing. Gender politics. What is it?
I remember like when my high school.
Once you invite Hasbro and Mattel into, and they only mean well. They're not going to try.
They mean well.
Mattel does not mean well.
I could argue that that's that they do mean well. Like when you entrust a system like capitalism into something organic like your gender identity, you can guarantee one thing. Parker Brothers and Mattel and these companies, they're definitely going to go where the heat is. They have no interest in informing your gender identity based
sure.
on some glass ceiling that they want to maintain. They want to make money. And if they think that little boys like to shoot things and make them bleed, they are going to become part of a cycle that makes little boys feel like they want to make things bleed.
But I also think that if when you're a kid, like labeling yourself is sort of a powerful thing. You're figuring out who you are, you're figuring out your identity, and it is easier like to be like, I'm a straight male, I'm a manly male, I like sports. You know what I mean? It's much harder when it's fluid. So I know that that's a good goal to have, but for kids that can be a little, it's a little more challenging.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, you don't look to your fucking Saturday morning cartoon. You don't even look to your goddamn parents. I'm sorry. Like, I they're awash in this shit. Like, everyone's confused. And if you look to who came before you for what you should do on your 13th birthday and what you should wear and what you should be playing with, what you should be doing, you might get a little bit of truth, but you're probably going to get a lot of misinformation. And parents, parents' responsibility is to do the best they can, I guess, within this maelstrom to make sure that there's
I think it's just
a smorgasbord in front of the kid.
There's also a likelihood because not because there's a right or wrong way to do it. It's just because. Like someone said earlier, everybody got it wrong.
No one's
ever been convicted of being the world's perfect parent. You could try so hard to make things gender neutral that you absolutely create more confusion than there needs to be.
Yeah, you can fuck your kid up that way too.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
As somebody who was a nanny in LA working with kids who grew up with a lot of money, There's the oppression of gender neutrality.
I've told the story 1,000 times. This is such a classic story. Like me being a kid growing up in the '70s, my mom sitting down with me. I was playing with it was Sesame Street figures. Like, and Sesame Street was already it was a multiracial environment and stuff. So there were like these little figures that were different colors. And my mom, I remember my mom saying, "Can you tell me the difference between this guy and this guy?" And I went, "Guy's got a hat on. That guy doesn't have a hat on." And she's like, "Really? That's the only difference?" And I said, "Well, his shirt's different." And my mom, I remember her going, "That is so great that you don't see the difference between them, because the real difference is that this guy's black and this guy's white, and you are part of a new generation that will not perceive race
until otherwise notified."
This is exactly your origin story, by the way.
It was the same mom who came and sat on the foot of my bed because there was a miniseries on TV, and I remember her coming into my room and waking me up and sitting on the foot of my bed and saying, "I'm waking you up and telling you there is going to come a day when people tell you that something called the Holocaust never happened." It did happen. It happened. They tried to kill all the Jews.
I don't care.
It happened.
I don't care who says what. What evidence they present you?
The most well-meaning. How can you get more progressive than that?
That story's so funny because it sounds like it just occurred to her.
It did. It did just occur to her because my mother realized things when the television said that. That's why I'm here. Because I am like an apocalypto. Like I've climbed up to the top of the fucking pyramid. Like the thing that told my mom what to think. On Wednesday, I would say, "God damn it, I don't want to wash the dishes." And she'd slap me and say, "You don't say God damn it. No one says God damn it."
Yeah,
that's using
the
Lord's name in vain. Thursday night, Johnny Carson, "God damn it, this fucking Burbank weather." But mom, I gotta, Johnny Carson said it, so fuck it. I gotta get out to where this world makes this television. I am going to control people's thoughts.
Oh, man.
I am going to become a real person.
Well, you had to get out to television where it was fine because you were on television.
Because it's where you make dumb people think. Period.
Let's bring out Spencer, everybody.
Really quick.
I got a new chair. That's what we're talking about now.
Paradigm
Spencer,
shift.
Spencer.
It's not folding. I don't like it.
You like the folding, you don't like this one.
I don't know about it.
Are you afraid of change? Is that what? Is that...
There's a pillow on it.
There's Wait. A pillow on your chair?
There was.
Are you saying...
are you implying that my butt ate the pillow? What are you saying?
No, I wasn't having none of that.
Spencer, would you agree that like the key to gender neutrality is not putting like not attributing anything to like male or female? It's just whatever it is. It's not...
I mean, labels are important to humanity, but you can't stay stuck on the labels because they're only as useful as defining the actual thing, which is important.
What was your favorite toy as a child?
That's a really brave stance, by the way. The key to gender neutrality is to not imprint any gender on anybody. Oh, really?
I had been operating
under the age-old idea that the key to gender neutrality was to imprint male gender on everything.
I don't think I articulated what I meant very well. What I meant was that, like, as far as gender neutrality goes, we say, like, oh, well, play with a truck because that's a boy thing, or play with a Barbie right. house because that's a girl thing. It's just, like, not... Jeff's walking across
What's
the stage.
Happening? Oh, let me go get my character sheets out.
No, yes. But you're right. It's not
gender
a
neutrality.
Chance.
Yeah, it turns out the key to gender neutrality is to not pay attention to gender. Who would have thought?
What?
I feel like we spent an hour and a half not getting to the bottom of this at all.
Yeah. What, did you think we would get to the bottom of this in an hour and a half? That would be like on CNN front page tomorrow. Harmontown figures out the gender problem.
You see what I mean? Like, I think a lesser-minded person would approach gender neutrality by saying, like, here's a boy thing, here's a girl thing, as opposed to, like, not getting beyond, like, things being boy or girl things. Like, trucks aren't necessarily boy things, and houses aren't necessarily... I'm killing myself after the...
I get what you're saying. I just don't know what I can do from here at this point. 20 minutes from the end.
Spencer, what was your favorite toy... As a young Spencer.
Legos? I mean, I don't know.
You like the dick butt, right?
Yeah, the dick butt.
For me, it was Legos and Star Wars action figures, and that's all I needed.
That's about building your own universe.
Boys' toys are cooler than girls' toys.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, well, that's the whole... It's all about options. Like, why don't women have powers? Because their options are limited. They're the only... Well, that's what power is having options. Power is being able to choose your options, right?
Right.
If you only have pink toys, if you only have the ability to choose pink toys, you're being limited. Boys' toys don't have a color. Like you said earlier, they're blue or black. They're not. They're every color. You know, pink toys are like girls' toys. So yeah. It's just about options. It's not about saying one's better than the other.
And boys' toys have changed, and girls' toys are still Barbies.
Yeah.
They really haven't changed much.
It's all about, like, emulating... house life.
Yeah.
Right?
From the girls in the audience, was anyone else jealous of boys' toys?
Because, yeah, there was more there's more types, like more options.
I was jealous of the girls' toys.
Yeah, I was jealous of my niece's toys. Their toys had, like, because there was an option that I wasn't exposed to.
Exactly.
I didn't like that. Like, wait, you have little ponies with hair? Like, my action figures don't have hair.
Oh, I left Strawberry Shortcake.
Fucking Strawberry, they smelled
great.
Fucking Purple Pie Man and fucking,
My friend Chris and I, his older sister had Strawberry Shortcake. And we would, we went into her bedroom.
And you'd sniff on them.
And we'd sniff them.
They were great.
Here's why.
We had a pageant. We had a Strawberry Shortcake pageant.
Wow.
And he had like a whole room full of Star Wars and G.I. Joe stuff. And like, but we were having a beauty pageant in his sister's bedroom with strawberry shortcake
girls.
Who won? Strawberry shortcake.
Yep.
She smelled the best.
Oh, it was a smell pageant.
What about the little pillow?
I had to sniff them.
The pillow kissing thing you had with your with the.
Oh, that was yeah.
Ramstack.
There was no toys involved in that.
When I was on the fucking road, I was, you know, like a fucking 11 years old, not, you know, very prepubescent. And there was the guy that played the prince. There's two male or a kid lead characters in The King and I. There's the prince, who's the son of the king, and Louis, the son of the teacher. It was me. And Doug Clafe, who was 13, he was going through puberty. And he jerked off in front of us just to show us that things came out like
things came out.
That's cool.
He was like, guys, you're a year and a half younger than me. Watch this. And we sat there, and it wasn't like, oh, come on, man. But we didn't know what the fucking point was. It was like watching somebody make the world's best, like, you know, chicken salad sandwich. It was like oh, I didn't know that recipe for that. I didn't know that.
What was he looking at? Was he making eye contact with you? Did
no,
he have his eyes closed? What was he doing? What was going on?
If you stroke your dick, it gets bigger. Also, for my money, the guy's dick was as big as a thermos. I had a little 11-year-old dick, and this guy had a dick like fucking some sort of whole, like just wow. And then he jerked off, and a little drop of white shit came out of it. And we're like, fucking interesting. and then he turned, like later on, we traveled with seven kids. There were four guys and three girls that traveled with the show.
Wait, the girls? You also showed the girls?
No. We were talking to the three girls afterwards. Like, you know, so Douglas over here, he can touch his ding-a-lingy thingy, and a little bit of white stuff emerges from it, like magic. And he turns to the girls in a very conspiratorial tone. And says, Kathy, Yvette. And these girls are 12, 13.
Meow.
Says, girls, you guys have the equivalent for girls. And they're like, well, yeah, we have our thing. Like when you get turned on. And they're like, yeah, we have our thing. And me and Luke and the other fucking guys are like, what? What is the thing? like what happens? Like your vagina, like becomes open or like
it blooms like a flower.
Going back in time, they were talking about like the girls get wet, but it was a fucking they had cracked this mysterious code, and it was secret because they were a year and a half older than us. There was nothing weird about the fact that Douglas just took us into the bathroom and showed us what cum looked like.
I remember in kindergarten I got all the kids together and was like, hey, I have something to show you, and then I just showed everyone my penis. And then
the Camille Nanciani story.
I was like, hey, you guys, check this out. And I had it out enough to be like, did everyone get a good look? And then they brought my mom in, and it was a whole thing. It was a whole thing.
Do you remember what motivated you? Were you like, holy shit, I have this thing?
I remember just being like, oh, they haven't seen this.
What was their reaction?
I don't remember. I remember it being awe. Right. But I'm sure it wasn't that.
That's, you remember it being what?
Awe.
Like,
oh.
Well, you're
awestruck.
Yeah,
sounds like Monday morning quarterbacking.
I showed everyone.
I'm sure I told the story on Harmon 10 before when I was like 4 or 5, and I took a bath with my niece who was 2 years younger than me, because I have half-sisters that are way older. And I saw the different like plumbing, and I emerged into one of my parents' fancy pants older cocktail parties. And I just walked out and said, ladies and gentlemen, I have an announcement to make. And I thought I was laying down some timeless wisdom. And I said, boys have wee-wees. Girls have crack-wees. And I left the room to applause. To applause. And I took it as I fucking blew their mind. The applause was, holy shit, that was fucking amazing.
And then your mom said there's an audition coming up for The King and I.
Crackwees.
You're going to bring him in.
Crackwees. And I stand by that assertion, you guys.
My friend was telling me that his friend's kid, who was 5, like, she just learned to masturbate totally. Like, she was scratching herself, and she was like, oh, this feels good. So she would do it in front of, like, company and stuff. She would just, like, whack off this 5-year-old girl. And they were like, They were like, why do you do this? She's like, it feels good. They're like, when do you stop? And she said, I stop when I see the flowers.
Whoa!
So this little five-year-old was fucking...
I think the Rolling Stones wrote a song about that. All right. Spencer, if you would, let's take us through some fantastic dungeoneering.
Okay.
Yeah, keep it to 13 minutes, will you?
Yeah. Yeah, I will. What's happening? Last time on Harmontown, the gang was feeling pretty empty after their victory against Admiral Darkstar. Maybe it was the fact that the shards of power were still in the wrong hands, or maybe it was because Krista Berg kept barfing everywhere and cut off his penis. All was not well. They encountered their friend Morris Goldbright, who made a cameo appearance, noticing Krista Berg's strange behavior and a stranger stone that Chris had dropped from his hand. The stone burst, and at the same time, Admiral Darkstar's castle crumbled into a hole in the frozen earth. This enraged the rogue and caused him to attack Quark. Quark was having none of that, however, and threw Krista Berg's severed member into the ice hole. In response, Chris, possessed by ghoulish strength, hurled Quark down into the ice hole himself. Sharpie leapt into action and teleported to Quark, carrying them down safely with his feather fall. But down where and down why, we'll find out.
Down why. So right now, Sharpie and I are falling down into a down where.
Yeah. Eyes locked.
You've got me. Who's got you?
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys are floating for quite a while, and you float, and you're kind of floating diagonally just because that's how momentum works. And you see the crumbled ruins of the statue, or not the statue, of the castle that's fallen through the ice hole. There's this whole new layer of ground. It looks like it's maybe 700 feet below, you know, the surface of the earth before. So you guys are down that far, and there's a new ground. This ground looks gray and cracked like dust. Like gray and cracked dust, and you see this crumbled, destroyed statue on it looks like it's covering, or it's fallen upon like a giant pile of bones, like maybe a woolly mammoth sort of thing, but bones, woolly bones, mammoth.
Can Sharpie and I feather fall upon that and land safely?
Well, yeah, you're falling and you're on this cracked gray ground now.
All right,
so that's where you are. You guys are above.
Like hundreds of feet above us.
Yeah. In this, out of this hole.
Do you guys see my dick?
So we landed on bones that are on the side of a pit or the bottom.
So when you're landing, it's pretty dark. The only thing you can see other than this great massive expanse of like undergroundness that you didn't know about is this just giant crumbled castle. It looks like it's on a heap of bones, like it landed on a heap of bones. That's all you can see.
We landed on a heap of bones.
All right.
Is what you're telling me.
Well, I mean, the castle did. You're next to it. You're kind of looking at it.
Or next to a castle that landed on a heap of bones.
Yeah.
Like a woolly bones mammoth, you said.
Yep. May have said that.
Chris, is it just me, or do they seem pretty casual?
About
falling on these bones. We're hundreds of feet above.
I pick her up and I toss her down.
Yeah, that happens.
Do I fall like a feather?
I mean, no.
I'm sorry.
Ah, crap.
That's gonna hurt.
Oh boy. All right. Wait. Oh, you've been down there, haven't you? Levitate. I have a spell called levitate.
Oh.
Okay. Can I cast that on a person?
Well, I'm gonna not look it up right this second and say yes.
Can I target her if I hear her screaming?
That's what I'm not looking up.
Swow!
As Moraine plummets to what is almost certainly her doom, she gets within maybe 40 feet of the ground before being slowed and propelled by this levitating force that gently drifts you down to the earth. You kind of stop like a foot or so above it.
Going down.
I'm sorry.
First floor, awesomeness.
Thank you so much.
Well, now it happens.
Can I, if I jump down, will you guys levitate me too? Listen, I know I've done a lot of bad shit recently. But I think
like throwing the previous person down.
But I'm feeling better.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I have levitate charged.
I can shoot an arrow at you.
I don't know if that's gonna help.
No, I don't think it will.
It could break your fall, maybe.
The arrow?
If he shoots it up, it'll like.
No. It'll slow me down while killing me.
Yeah.
I could craft something.
Well, that's true.
I would like to cast some form of light spell.
Okay.
You know the one I'm talking about.
Light, maybe?
Yeah. I cast it on my thumb.
Casting light upon your thumb. You hold it aloft to get a better view. And what you can see is a skinny figure approaching you. He looks real skinny.
Uh-oh.
He looks like a skeleton kind of guy. He's approaching. His hands are like this, and you can see they're glowing orange. Like
hey.
This.
Hey, orange hands. Identify yourself.
He hisses in a language you don't really understand. It's not common.
Is it parcel tongue?
You don't know parcel tongue, so you wouldn't be able to tell.
Is he a skeleton?
Yeah, he's a skeleton. Hissing. Hissing.
Any guys got relationships with skeletons?
I mean, sometimes elves look like skeletons.
Is he
That's
being
true.
Hostile?
I speak elvish.
He's, no. His hands don't look too hostile. I mean, they're glowing, I guess.
They're glowing orange.
Yeah.
I walk up to him and introduce myself. I said, how do you do, sir? My name is Quark. I'm a barbarian, and we could use your help right now. We're in the middle of a real predicament.
He's like, he stares at you with his cold, blue, icy gaze, and he says, what is your name? What is your name?
Quark.
Quark. Well met, sir. You've come down here, which means you're in a desperate place.
You got that right, Jack.
Yeah. What are your compatriots' names?
Doesn't really matter.
Ask him what his name is.
Huh? You're 700 feet away right now.
Ask him what his name is.
What? I can't hear you. You're 700 feet away.
I feel bad.
Okay. I'm sorry. What's your name and flamers?
We're Moraine and Sharpie.
That's good to know.
What's your name, Jackson?
I am Lenev, the rebel. I come from Tormod Tor, the city of unshackled dead.
Oh, shit.
Lenev, how come your hands are glowing?
Oh, they just... Yeah. That's just who I am.
Are the shackles death?
The shackles aren't death. Death is the mortal coil. The necromancers, you see, they shackle our souls to our bones and force us into labor. But if we can throw off those shackles, we gain something better than an immortality. Unmortality.
What?
Unmortality.
You see, I'm not bound to any necromancer or dark forces. I simply exist until I stop.
Are you bound to any gender identity?
Are you bound to logic? I can't understand what the fuck you're saying. I'm so drunk. I'm sorry about that.
I wish I could have prevented that or done something to help.
No, I'm not going to do that.
He's undead and he's enslaved.
What is he saying? What is he...
He's saying he's unmortal.
You're 700 feet away.
I puke acid into the... hole in his general direction.
You hear drops as his vomit rains down from above and splashes into the dusty ground.
I'm sorry about my friend. What's your name?
Lanev, the
Lanev?
Rebel.
Lanev? Lanev.
The rebel.
Lanev the rebel.
Yes. I don't get it.
Well, it just, you know, a lot of people who have been characterized as rebels aren't named Lenev.
That's what's so rebellious.
Yeah.
Were you raised a boy or a girl?
A corpse.
That's as neutral as it gets, baby.
Bonjour, Lenev.
All right, Lynette.
How's it going?
How do we get out of here?
Oh, out of here? Like up? I can't fly.
Well, maybe not necessarily up, but how do we get out? And why are you talking to us?
Oh, you just fell down here. Well, actually, I was sent out here as a part of my duties for Tormod. You see, our crafts market has been just destroyed.
Oh, no.
By there's a castle that fell through the ceiling, and it just crushed it. It killed like 200 of our finest craftsmen.
Oh,
but there was a crafts market,
and not like dead, like I'm dead, like dead,
like
double,
bad dead,
yeah,
like double unmortal,
not like cool glowing hands skeleton, like done dead. Okay. That's why I'm here.
I jump down into the well and I yell, "Save me!"
Oh shit! God damn it!
Oh boy!
I'm a coming.
That's a bold move.
I'm coming.
I'll try to levitate on him.
Yeah, you got some more of those.
Full. Oh, thank God!
You hit the ground just a bit. Just a bit. You're fine, though.
Who's this fucker?
I am Lenev, the rebel. I come from Tormod Tor, the city of unshackled dead.
What is
you
that?
You have the touch of death about you, sir.
Uh-oh. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Shit. And you look like shit.
I pull Lenev the rebel aside and go, "Look, Lenev, I just met you, and I've known this guy Krista Berg a long time, but he's been acting really strange. Can you help us out with this?"
He looks like he has some sort of ghastly or spectral or evil presence lurking about, corrupting his soul and his mind.
Do you have any advice?
Yeah. You're gonna need to there's this rare plant. It only grows some places. I don't even know where, because you know we don't like plants too much. But I know what it's called.
What's it called?
It's called the Tarragon of Virtue.
The Tarragon. The Tarragon of Virtue.
Anyone who eats the Tarragon of Virtues, their soul will be cleansed and they'll be purified.
All right.
Guys, can we make this part of... I'm sorry, I know. I've been a real shit. Can this part of the quest be, like, that we find the Tarragon of Virtue for me? It doesn't have to be the main thing. It could be, like, a sub-quest. It could be, like, a side quest.
With my craft supplies, I construct a muzzle.
That's some impressive crafting you got there.
Thank you. I offer it to Chris DeBerg.
What am I going to do with this?
I think you should put this on.
All right, as a show of good faith.
Thank you. That's what it's for. It's a symbol.
I shoot her with my laser beam.
Oh, shit.
Oh. It hits.
Oh!
You deal 6 laser damage.
Holy smokes.
All right.
It's not feeling good.
Whose turn is it?
It's whoever's turn. Whoever wants to do a thing.
I take my speedy longbow.
I'm so sorry. I don't deserve to die.
I don't think you're sorry.
I am. My soul is corrupted. I have the touch of death about me. You heard Lenev the rebel.
Let's find the Tarragon of Virtue, for pity's sake. Lenev the rebel, is there an exit we can get out?
I can take you to a bone sage. Maybe they can help you.
Bone sage?
What? So one of our people is attacking our other people.
I don't care about that.
I take my speedy longbow and I fire 2 arrows at Krista Berg.
Oh, okay. Shit.
At his legs.
This isn't constructive!
It might not be, but you take 7 damage.
Okay.
That's in the legs.
I use my armlet of spring.
Okay.
Thing. I ensnare Krista Berg.
Yeah, that happens.
I get it, guys.
We gotta cool this shit out,
I'm
man.
So sorry. I don't know what is going on. I mean,
do you see yourself pushing people down holes and things?
Only after I do it. As soon as I do it, I'm like, oh, this is happening.
I look for an exit behind Lenev where he came toward us.
Even with your dark/low light vision, you can't see anything. It's all blackness. He's like, I could take you to Tormod Tor. That's all I got.
Is that where the bone sage is?
Yeah.
Maybe we should go to Tarmont Tour.
Let's go to the Bone Sage. Can you guys stop fighting for a little while while we go to the Bone Sage?
I am so sorry.
It's okay.
No, he can't be trusted.
Well, I take the muzzle and I peel it down and it entraps his arms as well.
Okay.
Because I did that before. No. It's a thing I did.
He's also entangled. He's all wrapped up. You're no threat right now, Kumail.
He's entangled by me.
Who is Kumail?
Oh, nice.
All right. I'm sorry. Just guys, carry me, or
I'll carry you.
I take Krista Berg and I say, "Look, we're gonna carry you to the Bone Sage of Tormod the Toboggan."
Tormatorium.
How are we gonna carry him?
Huh?
How are we gonna carry him?
I'll carry him. I'm a barbarian.
Are we gonna tie him up?
Did you have him ensnared?
He's wearing a muzzle.
Well, I ensnared him with.
I carry him like the end of Officer and a Gentleman, and I carry him out.
Yes,
well, and I gave him a rope muzzle that covers his face and his hands.
He can't bite.
And I look at Krista Berg and I said, "Look, I'm going to carry you to the Bone Sage. No funny business."
No.
Okay. No funny business?
No.
No, there will be no funny business, or no, there will be funny business?
You heard me.
I lean down and I just start making out with him. I'm holding him like a baby, and I do like the Pieta, and I just start French kissing him.
I puke into his mouth.
I puke back on his mouth.
I achieve erection.
I am in awe of his erection. Then I puke on it. And I go, "Can we fucking get to the Bone Sage, or are we going to keep puking on each other the whole way?"
Yep, no, I'm good.
Yeah, all right. He doesn't have a dick.
Oh, I have no dick.
Oh!
No, no, no. Off to the side, I saw my penis get around.
Thank you for coming to Harmontown, everybody. That's our show. Holy moly. We got to start playing D&D a little earlier in the show, I think. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Sarah, for coming up. Thank you, Aaron McGathy, Kumail Nanjiani. I'm Jeff Davis. Special Crittenden. One more time for Dan Harmon, your mayor, everybody.
Thank you. I hope you all learned a little something about Daniel Quinn and gender tonight.